Hey there, welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Cormdale Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking a little bit about a book we've all been reading called Sensing Jesus.
Yeah, we thought it'd be fun to just devote a podcast to some of the reading we've been doing. Some of the listeners have asked, hey, what are good books to read? And so every once in a while, I just want to take a week to talk about some reading that we've been doing. And we've been reading this book as a staff team. I want to frame out some of the important concepts from this book because I think they're helpful just to everyone, anyone who's trying to walk with Jesus. This book is written by Zach Eswine. Zach is a pastor in St. Louis. It's a really well-written book. He's a good writer. And so when I come across books that are both interesting and insightful and also well-written, those always are at the top of my list because I just appreciate people that can write well and pull me into what they're saying. So the book is really written for those who are engaged in Christian ministry. And so that would include church members. It would include parents. It would include anybody who just, man, I want to be involved in making disciples. But especially if you're a pastor, if you're a ministry leader, if you're a deacon, if you're in a nonprofit Christian ministry, anyone like that, this would be especially a helpful book for you. And the premise of the book is this. The subtitle is Life and Ministry as a Human Being. And Zach Eswine wants us to embrace the fact that ministry is about recovering our humanity. It's about embracing the fact that we're not God. We are not the Christ. We have limits and we have limitations and we don't know everything. We don't see perfectly, and that's all okay. And that all gives us good reason to just trust Jesus. And so I thought on this podcast, guys, we'd tackle especially the sort of first five chapters of this book because he does a really interesting job setting up what he thinks are three temptations that all of us have. And here's how he sets it up theologically. He says, theologically, there are communicable attributes and incommunicable attributes of God. The communicable attributes are those that he shares with human beings, and the incommunicable attributes are ones that are God's alone. And three of God's incommunicable attributes, attributes that belong to him and him alone, are omnipresence, omniscience, and omnipotence, the fact that he is everywhere, that he knows everything, and that he's all-powerful. And Zach Eswine says, hey, if you look at the temptation in the garden, you look at Adam and Eve, you look what Satan's tempting them to, he's tempting them to essentially covet those attributes of God. Yeah. And that we've been falling for that same temptation ever since, that all of us wish we could fix everything, we wish we could know everything, and we wish we could be everywhere. And so he calls these temptations being an everywhere for all, a fix it all, and a know it all. And man, as we've been engaging this book as a staff team, it's just been really remarkable to sort of call us to repentance in the ways that we try to do these things, that we don't embrace the fact that we can only be in one place at a time, that we can't fix everything, and that we don't know everything. What I appreciate about this book, Sensing Jesus, is that it's a thought-provoking book. It's not the kind of book that you're going to walk away with like, oh man, here's these three great principles I can put to work. It's one of those, it's more a slow, steady read. This is going to make you think, and it's going to make you step back and go, man, I probably need to reflect on that a little bit. Probably need to think that through a little bit. And books like that are so refreshing to me in a world of quick fix and, you know, principle-driven books. And here's three ways to do this and five ways to do that and, you know, six ways to be better at this. Man, a book that makes me think and just makes me sit back and go, that's a good line. That's a good turn of phrase. That's a thoughtful insight. Those kinds of books seem to be fewer and far between. Mm-hmm. And when I find one, it's just refreshing. So that's one of the things I've enjoyed about this book.
Early on in this book, he says, greatness, even in ministry, cannot escape humanity. How did I ever begin to assume that it was supposed to? Being human does not mar greatness. It informs it and sets its noble boundaries. And why had I come to think otherwise? And so he goes on to just talk about those things that you're talking about, those attributes that you're talking about. But that line made me just really intrigued with this book because basically what he's saying is to be human, you have boundaries. And just as I thumb through this book and continue, it's a slower read book. It's more of a reflective read and kind of a methodical read. It's not like a pick it up, read a chapter, put it or pick it up, crank it out kind of book. So don't if you are going to read it, don't try to just crank this book out in a day. Give it a slower read. But what I love about that is because if we're really honest with ourselves, we have boundaries and we have limitations, and we're good at certain things and we're bad at other things. And this whole book just gives you a new framework and basically a new disposition to just say, yep, I'm good at this, I'm bad at that, and at the end of the day, I'm a human. And so I'm going to go home, I'm going to put it to rest, wake up the next day, and go again.
How has this book shaped your guys' view of leadership in the church? Seems like there's some leadership books where there's like, you know, here's your strengths. This is how you can be a good leader, figuring out those strengths and utilizing them well. This seems to be a book that's more focused on being humble and focusing on your weaknesses.
Well, I wouldn't even say focusing on your weaknesses. I would just say embracing your humanness. Hmm. And that's why it's a brilliant book, is because it is counterintuitive to how most leadership books are written. It's like, you know, go take the hill, have a strategy, have a plan, do the next thing. You know, any book on leadership is sort of leadership heavy. And he's trying to say, man, leadership is actually about being human and embracing your humanness. And once you do that, you become a deeper leader, a better leader, a more present and engaged and faithful leader. And that's what Christian ministry is about. It's about following Jesus as the ultimate leader. It's not about us being the ultimate leader. So that's why it's been helpful for me. Hmm.
Yeah, I think the biggest way that it's influenced my leadership recently is just he talks about just how ministry is local and how anything global starts with something local. Because we live in a day and age where everything is networked and we're always, you know, getting invitations to some random guy's LinkedIn profile. And, you know, you're bombarded with all these different things that you can be a part of that are always out there. They actually have nothing to do with your city. They have nothing to do with where God has maybe called you specifically. And so what's beautiful about this book for me as a leader is just like, yep, here's the deal. You're called to Omaha. You have a wife and you have your kids. And God has entrusted you to that. Right now, right here. It's not that all that stuff out there is bad. It's just that he really makes you refocus and recalibrate to what God's actually called you to here. So rather than being discontent with everything that's right in front of you and not being present, to be present, to not be preoccupied, and to take a nap, you know, is kind of the premise of the book for me as a leader.
So let me read an excerpt from a section called Exposing Our Temptations. In this section, we're asking Jesus to expose the primary temptations that hinder the recovery of our humanity and our seeing his glory. In so doing, Jesus will begin to show us three noble limits that are ours for surrender. And this is the language that Eswine uses, this language of noble limits. Like, hey, these are limitations to our humanity, and it's noble to embrace these. First, we can only be one place at a time, which means that Jesus will teach most of us to live a local life. We will resist and want to act like we are omnipresent, but he will patiently teach us that as human beings we cannot be. Second, we cannot do everything that needs to be done, which means that Jesus will teach us to live with the things that we can neither control nor fix. We will want to resist Jesus and act as if we are omnipotent, but we will harm others and ourselves when we try. Third, we are unable to know everyone or everything, which means that Jesus will teach us to live with ignorance, our own and others. In other words, we are not omniscient. Jesus will require us to stop pretending that we are. Ask yourself this question: which are you more tempted to pretend that you are? An everywhere for all, a fix it all, or a know it all? Guys, let's just talk about how do we see those realities in ourselves and in the people that we're leading and ministering to, those three temptations.
I think we see it often just in our social media. We can be a part of everybody's life all the time, just on our phone right away. And then I think that just leads us to being preoccupied. And so I can follow certain bloggers in different cities, which messes with my locality. I can follow different people. I can follow you two guys right now if I want on Instagram, which is going to give me a recourse to what you did last week, and then I can follow you as we come out of here. And what that does to my heart is it makes me not present with where I'm currently at, and I want to actually be where you're at, and you want me to know where you're at, and so you're going to go ahead and post about that. And so that just messes with my disposition, and it preoccupies my mind. And so when I'm in a conversation with somebody, even right now with you guys, I can be thinking about what I'm not doing, and that's not God-honoring, nor embracing my humanity. And what that does, as one says, is I'm starting to covet God's position and his attributes when I start to do those things.
It's interesting to think about how much of our modern anxiety and our sense of busyness is actually driven by the fact that our world is too big. You know, we just can think about and be invested in too many conversations at once through social media or even just through worrying about things that aren't ours to worry about. He talks about the illusion of being somewhere other than we are. Mm-hmm. And it's just if you just think about – like if I think about the things that tend to worry me, very few of them are things I should actually be worried about. It's just like I don't have any control over that situation. It's not mine to worry about, you know. But the more things I'm reading and the more things I'm thinking about and the more people I'm interacting with, the more scope there is of things for me to get flustered about or concerned about.
Yeah, and then therefore we start questioning everything that we're doing. You know, if that family's doing that and that lady's blogging about that, well then should I be doing that? Should I – you know, we just start to second guess and start questioning and become more and more skeptical about everything that we're entrusted with. And that just leads us to a bad, preoccupied disposition that I don't think is God-honoring. And Eswine really tackles that head-on, which is brilliant and fruitful for my own soul.
Here's the line I was thinking of. I just found it. A North American like me is likely to blur each day into the next by practicing a continuous, unbroken stream of daily activity in order to make the best use of the shortest amount of time, all the time, every day. And that to me is so many people in our congregation and myself included, just this sense of I got to be efficient, I got to make the most of every moment every day. And so my schedule is just packed and there's a continuous unbroken stream of activity, even when that activity, Dusty, is checking your Instagram because I haven't checked it lately. And so I want to, you know, like those, it just adds more data to my world in a way that's not often helpful and doesn't help me be present. And so for me, one of the applications of this book and just of some of the broader things God's been doing in my own heart even before I read this book is just to cultivate the discipline of being present, especially when I'm in a conversation with someone, just being there, putting the phone away, putting my mind fully present in this moment right now and trying to engage this exact place in this exact time.
Yeah, where this book has been hitting home for me is the fix-it-all piece, leading a gospel community full of broken people, and I am one of those people myself. There's something inside of me that wants to control people's sanctification, and you know I'm genuinely burdened by people's sin and their struggles. But how I'm so prone to try to fix those things myself and not run to God in dependence on him. And this section just kind of sheds a light on that. And when you think about how it relates back to the garden and just that temptation to be like God, like that's such a frightening thing, you know, to think that, man, our hearts are so evil that we think we can be God, even when we're trying to be good and holy.
I've been provoked by the chapter on being a know-it-all with this line. We are tempted to believe that our work is done once we've decided the right thing to do. But once we prayerfully determine the right thing to do, we must still contemplate the right way to do it. And man, most of my leadership life has just been, well, here's the right thing to do. Let's go do that. And not really carefully stopping to ask the question, what's the right way to do this? And what's the right time to do this? And how should I go about? So once I've arrived at the right thing to do, how do I ask the deeper questions of what's the right timing and what's the right way and how should I go about this? And so, man, I feel like I come to conclusions often, but I'm not doing the right thing in the right way. And that's just been a provoking thought to help me slow down and ask those deeper questions. Here's another great line. Dusty, this applies even to some of the questions about family that we talked about last week as the listeners were asking questions. One way to help us is to think of making decisions in church and family as creating paths rather than building roads. Creating paths moves with the landscape, is well familiar with the inhabitants and geography of the place, and provides movement while still leaving the place intact. In contrast, road building uses the place as a means to an end and sets dynamite to whatever stands in its way in order to get from one place to another. And that's such a great analogy for me because, right, both a road and a path get you somewhere. They just do it in different ways with different respect for the geography of what's there and the place where you are and how you need to move with the situation. And that was just a helpful analogy.
The more I reflect on this book, it's just so timely. You know, there's always been talk about Hollywood stars of why they are drug addicts and why they commit suicide, and it always leads back to loneliness. Like, they're so well known and they're so famous, yet they're so empty and lonely and have these huge mansions, and then they end up killing themselves in the bathtub. And we always reflect on that, and everybody in normal culture every day, you know, blue collar life is kind of like, why, you know, if I had that kind of money. Well, so it always just goes back to loneliness. And what's interesting about this book is I think just the Western culture that we live in is trending towards everyone can be a Hollywood star, meaning everyone can do their own thing. We don't actually I don't even have to live in the city that I work in. You know, I can live wherever I want, and I can commute, and I can sit at a coffee shop and be an executive with my earbuds in. And, you know, like, there's so much – I don't have to be present with people, which I think is just leading to a deeper loneliness in our culture, which is confronting humanity. And what's beautiful about what Eswan's doing here in this book is he's saying, nope, actually, we can't do that. You're a person. You have flesh. You have some organs. And you're eventually going to die. And you're going to need somebody at your deathbed. And so I think it's just interesting timing for this book to hit the church because of just where culture has been and where it is going. In other words, we're all capable now of living our Hollywood lifestyle if we want. Maybe not super famous, but we can be just as isolated and in the bathtub. And Eswan is confronting that head on, talking about humanity.
So lots more we could say about the book. Like we said, it's provoked a lot of thoughts. And so these are just sort of some initial reflections on some of the things that it's making us think about. But one of the things we want to do on some sort of regular basis is just invite you into some of the stuff we're reading and thinking about and hope that that might be helpful to you as well. So the book is Sensing Jesus by Zach Eswine. And again, if you're particularly invested in the work of making disciples, whether that's as a church member or in a vocational ministry kind of context, this is going to be one that you will gain a lot from.
So if you go out and you pick up Sensing Jesus, we'd love to hear your thoughts and your own reflections on Zach Eswine's book, Sensing Jesus. Tweet us at Corumdeo Omaha, and we'll talk to you again next week on the Wednesday Conversation. Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. Stop it, Dusty White.
What?
You're always so surprised.
Well, it's because you're always so loud.
That's going to make a great outro right there.